I'm Donna.
And I'm Carrie.
And we are Paranormal Chicks.
Episode 351. Donna's freezing.
It's freaking cold.
The hair is on so high.
What is it?
65.
68 is where I normally keep mine, or 70.
It was on 68 when you were here last time. I put it up for you.
Yeah, because I was like, but she was also cold, so that's why she did it.
We went to my mom's today. Do you know what her heater was on?
72.
Yes. I was like, Mom, you got to turn the heater off. And she was like, I was cold, so I had it up to 72. I was like, 72? Man, I'm in the pits of fucking fiery hell.
That's hilarious. But this morning, it was in the 30s.
Yeah. But this is why I went to my mom's. Okay, y'all. My grandma sold Avon. And back in 1993, I remember the year. But also, I had to Google it on eBay, and it also said the year. And I was like, I told Colby it was 1993. Anywho's, it's in 1993, they came out with these snowmen that sit on lights. Like, they have, like, a base. They have three color lights in it, and it sits in, and he's holding a little, what's it called? Broom. We've had it since 1993. We had the boy, my grandma had the girl, then we got grandma's girl.
Because she died.
Yeah, she did. Well, the bulbs died. So, Mom replaced the bulbs. She replaced it with a 1 million watt bulb.
Oh, Lord.
Really have no idea what she put in there. But it literally melted the snowman.
Like, right.
Melted this plasticky snowman. So Colby and I have been off all week just because we're on, like, doing a staycation. And we went to this place called it used to be called the Rusty Chandelier. Now I think it's just the Rusty. But anyway, we went there. It's got all the old antique-y stuff. And I come out of the bathroom because duh. And Colby was like,
me and Carrie used to go there, okay? Before Colby was in the picture.
And I walked out and Colby was like, oh my God, look what they had. And they had both the boy and the girl. And they were only $6 a piece. Those motherfuckers had no idea what they had.
Right.
Because the duo on eBay is like 80 to 100.
Shit.
Yeah. So anyway, so we bought them quickly before anybody noticed. Took them to Mom, of course, today. And she didn't cry. I was like, damn it, you didn't cry. She's like, well, my eyes are tearing up. Because I thought it was going to be such a good, like, surprise, yeah, that, like, she was going to cry.
Yeah.
She didn't. That's how I gauge all my gifts to my mom, is did she cry or not. Also, she did well up, though.
That is, like, you always have expectations of, like,
you don't know me.
Yes, because you'll be like, you didn't laugh. Well,
you're right.
I thought it was funny, but, like, but then if I, like, crack up, she's like, wasn't that funny?
Like, you're not wrong.
Oh, my God.
But she did tear up because she's a crier, and that's how I measure how good the gift is, yeah, with her. She did tear up, though.
But I know that y'all have the girl because Colby told me.
Yeah, that motherfucker tells you everything. Yeah, we kept the girl because her girl still works. I was like, are you sure you don't want this for parts? And she was like, no. But the one we bought was missing the boy one that we bought was missing the
broom.
Yeah. But luckily, I was like, I bet she still has the broom. Like, guarantee she threw everything away but kept the broom. What was sitting on her kitchen counter? The broom.
That's hilarious. You left out the part that she melted the snowman the same day that you were putting up your decorations and broke some.
Okay, hold on. Let me just pull this text thread up. Okay, so this is the text that I got from Mom right after I broke three Santa Clauses. She said, well, I dropped the wooden reindeer and it broke in half. My hand soap snowman's arm fell off again. I dropped a snowman stocking holder and broke three pieces off, and we couldn't figure out what's wrong with the lights on the tree. So I ordered some new bulbs. I'm about to get a salad and not touch anything else while my brother-in-law fixes the lights on the tree. And I was like, well, I just broke three Santas, like mother, like daughter. I literally was walking to the trash can with a snowman that I had broken and missed the trash can, and he bounced off and hit the ground and broke again. And then that's when she texts about the snowman that she had melted. I laughed so hard at the snowman. And it probably hurt her feelings that it melted because it is so old.
Yeah.
But Colby and I laughed so hard at that. And I was like, Colby said, what did she put in there? 150 watt bulb? You know, y'all know we're blow up people outside. And we had this blow up that Donna and I got one time on one of our dirt cheap hauls, which is like a salvage store here that went out of business.
Before Colby was in the picture.
And I had this blow up that was so amazing. It was Santa standing there holding a bag of feed, And all of the reindeer were next to him, standing in a trough with all of their names in front of them. And a couple of the reindeer's heads would alternate back and forth.
It was really fucking good.
It was one of the best blow-ups I've literally ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
Well, that motherfucker finally bit the dust this year. And we're going to order another motor and just see if Colby can replace it. Because we've already got tape in some places. We're going to try. Literally the day we put the blow-ups up, though, without that reindeer, we got two text messages from people saying, where are the reindeer? Did they die? And I'm like, damn it! Like, people would be, like, if I met them and we figured out, like, where we lived, and like, wait, are you the house with the blow-up reindeer? And I'm like, yes.
I know. I loved it. Because at that time, I wasn't a blow-up person.
Right.
But it was like, no, this is really good.
Really cute. And I don't even remember how much I got. Like, it was so cheap.
Yeah.
But they don't exist anymore. So I can't even freaking replace it.
Ugh.
Or I would literally buy, like, three. Just to make them last years.
Yeah.
So what did we do? We got a 12-foot Santa and a snowman that's eating a ice cream cone, and he shakes because, and it says that he's got brain freeze.
Yeah, it's really cute.
And he just stands there and shakes like, ugh.
I was going to say, like, so when I came in, I was going to say something to her, but she was on the phone. But I was going to say, hey, I think you need to bring your snowman in. He's shaking out there.
And then I'm going to move on from all my Christmas decorations talk. I had this patient that, this is truly one of my favorite gifts I've ever gotten, literally ever in life.
Well, you know she's not talking about one from me.
I was telling her, because she and her husband do a bunch of like woodworking stuff with like making decorations for the yard. And I told her, I was like, oh my gosh, one of my across the street neighbors has the cutest little like wood Christmas decoration. And it's Santa and Mrs. Claus standing there. And Santa's holding a mistletoe, and they're about to kiss. And she's like, oh, I can make that. I'll make you one. And I was like, I will give you all the money. I have none, but I will give you all the money. You know,
yeah.
Like, well, cut to a couple months ago, she and her husband made me one and brought it. And so it is in the middle view. I have it under the eave of the house a little bit because I want it to last 100 years. I'm like, this thing is not getting put in the elements, but it's got a spotlight on it. Like, it's literally the center attraction.
It is, and it's so cute.
I mean, and she did it, like, he cut the wood and they painted it together. Like, they had like a little stencil, but I'm just like, oh my God.
You know what I'm oh my God about?
Patreoners!
Hell yeah!
Thank you, Hannah P. from Australia.
McKaylee C. or McKaylee C. from Ohio.
Megan P. from Montana.
And Kimber S. from Idaho.
You are Idaho. If you want an extra episode a week, just like they're getting, plus a shout out, plus thank you cards and stickers that we're behind on, join us at patreon.com/theAPC podcast. I literally did like a whole Christmas monologue.
You did.
I had hot chocolate at my mom's.
Oh, Lord.
She was like, do you want sugar-free or regular? I was like, regular.
Absolutely.
Duh. If I'm doing hot chocolate, give me fully loaded.
Yeah. Did she have marshmallows?
It came with it.
I like those little marshmallows. You know what else I like?
Target. Coffee from Starbucks.
I mean, you're not wrong on any of these, but Wicked.
Oh my God, we went and saw it, y'all.
Yes, it was so good.
Literally, I saw one of our friends on Facebook that posted they had gone to see Wicked and they were like, no notes, it's amazing. And that's literally all I have to say about it. It was amazing, no notes.
Right.
Like, there's nothing in it that I complained about.
No.
Which is, like, shocking for me because I always can find something to complain about, especially food.
Well, I mean, to be fair, you did complain that it was hot.
It was hot there. I had to use Donna's phone. And
what?
What did I use? Your fan. I had to use Donna's fan. And two things. Well, one, the thing I do have to complain about is that they definitely buried the lead that it was a part one.
Yeah.
Somebody had just happened to tell me before. Like, if I had went in there and I had seen part one, I'd have been like, what?
Yeah. I luckily told Tiffany right before, and she was like, oh my God, I would have been pissed.
The other thing is that, y'all, Tiffany is loud in a movie. She's going to be so pissed at me for saying that. Tiffany was like, huh. Like, just the grunting and groaning. Because I guess I just hadn't watched a movie with Tiffany in a long time.
Yeah.
And Donna was like, oh, she does it every single movie.
Yeah, she does. And it's endearing to me because it's like my mama.
No, it was hilarious. But I was like, what is she?
She's got like commentary.
Yes.
And she's like reacts to
yes,
it.
It was so funny. She's going to be so pissed at me.
Oh, well, you know what I'm pissed about?
What?
I got jury duty again.
Are you serious?
I am fucking serious.
Love that for you. Maybe you won't get called.
I am hoping. I got a call this Friday. So when y'all hear this, I might be at jury duty or it was canceled. Because it'll come out on Monday, which yeah. is when I need to go.
Yeah.
But I was like, are you fucking kidding me? You literally said like, oh my God, Donna always gets summoned and I don't.
She got summoned again.
Like, how is my name in this fucking rotation?
The bright side is, though, is if you do have to go on Monday, they're not going to pick you.
No, I know, but that just annoys me.
Yeah.
But no, I know, because they're not going to pick me. Really wanted to be picked that one time, but they didn't want me. No one wants me. I hate rejection.
I don't feel like many people love rejection. I mean, it could be a kink, but I feel like most people hate it.
Well, it really hurts my feelings.
I think it does most people.
Some people can just be like, oh, you're lost.
Yeah, some people can. But I'm like, not you.
Really great. I wish you could see it, but you're right. I might suck.
Okay, you don't suck at everything. Just the D's. Well, one thing that you don't have to worry about rejecting you is sleep. When you use Beams Dream Powder.
I was going to say, sometimes sleep does not want to find me. That's why I need Beams Dream Powder.
When your sleep is poor, you're just low energy the next day. You really need good sleep. That's why we're so excited to talk about Beams Dream Powder, a science-backed healthy hot cocoa for sleep. This is not the cocoa that my mom gave me, but I would have welcomed it.
Oh, absolutely. Because it's got so many delicious flavors. I personally love the cinnamon cocoa, but I just got the sea salt caramel kind. And oh my God, decadent.
And unlike the hot cocoa that I use in my mom's, this one only has 15 calories and 0 grams of sugar. So you can be confident that better sleep has never tasted better. Now, other sleep aids can cause next day grogginess, but Dream contains a powerful all-natural blend of reishi, magnesium, L-theanine, apigenin, and melatonin to help you fall asleep and stay asleep and then wake up refreshed.
Now, like I said, they have lots of delicious flavors. So sea salt caramel, brownie batter, love brownie batter, vanilla chai, the original flavor, cinnamon cocoa, all the things. It's something for everyone. And you know what? Everyone needs better sleep. And Dream has been tested for high quality efficacy and formulated to ease your body into rest. And I didn't know this, but sleep has 4 stages and Beams Dream Powder supports all 4 stages and it helps you fall asleep faster and stay asleep longer.
And best of all, Beams Cyber Monday sale is now live. There's never been a better time to try Beams best-selling Dream Powder. Get up to 50% off while supplies last when you go to shopbeam.com/creep and use promo code creep at checkout.
That's shopbeam.com/creep. That's shopbeam.com/creep and use code creep for up to 50% off.
This is their biggest sale ever and the lowest they've ever sold Dream for. So head on over to shopbeam.com/creep and use promo code creep for up to 50% off.
All right. We're going to be talking about a woman named Barbro Carlin. She was born in 1954 in Sweden. And you're going to like this story because guess what? When she was a young warthog, she felt like she wasn't living her true life. She believed that she had other parents than the ones she lived with. And she didn't think her name was Barbro, but instead it was Anne. Now, this started happening around 2 years old. And Barbro would ask about people that the family had no idea who she was talking about, such as where is her sister, Margot? Her parents insisted that, you know, she called them Ma and Pa, but she didn't want to because she was convinced her real dad was going to come get her any day. Now, Barbara had all different kinds of phobias. She was so scared of men who wore any type of uniform. She also hated getting her hair cut. Like, it was a huge deal, and she would throw a fit every time. And it wasn't just like, no, I don't want my hair cut. It was the fear of getting it done. But, I mean, her parents did force her to get a haircut. Another thing is that Barbara would take baths, but not showers. Like, she feared showers. And this wasn't just something that happened when she was two and she stopped talking about Anne. She kept insisting for years that she had a different family, a different life. And Barbara was plagued by nightmares where men would burst through the door and capture her and her family. And she also told her family that her full name was Anne Frank. Right?
What? Did not see that coming.
And she talked about how her family would play hide and seek in an attic. Now, for us, we all pretty much know who Anne Frank was. But at this time, Anne had only died 9 years prior to Barbara being born. Anne Frank was a nameless victim in the Holocaust still. And if you need a refresher on Anne Frank, here we go. This is, you know, Donna's condensed version. Anne Frank was born in Frankfurt in 1929. Her mother was Edith, her father was Otto, and she did have a sister named Margot, and she was 3 years older. Now, how did Barbara know that?
Yeah.
Anyway, Hitler came into power and was blasting all the hatred for the Jews, and since her family was Jewish, they all left Germany and went to Amsterdam. Life was going as well as it could for her family. Her father owned his own business there. The girls were enjoying school, making friends. But then Margot received a call up, like a, not like a ring ring phone, but like a, hey, report to kind of thing. And it was a labor camp in Nazi Germany on July 5th, 1942. And the family was like, we don't think that's just like a labor camp kind of thing. Like, we think it's going to be something really bad. It's a trap. And so they went into hiding. And it was Anne's family and then four more people who hid in the attic to escape the persecution. Sadly, they were discovered 2 years later and they were arrested by police and taken to Auschwitz, which was one of the concentration camps. Around 350 people from Anne's transport were immediately taken to the gas chambers and were murdered. Anne, Margot, and their mother was sent to a labor camp for women, and Otto ended up in the camp for men. But in early November 1944, Anne and Margot were sent to another concentration camp called Bergen-Belsen, and they both contracted typhus. And in February 1945, so a year after that, I mean, it was the next year, but it was only a few months, they both died. Margot died first and then Anne shortly after. But you probably know that because kids everywhere like are introduced to Anne Frank in school. We have to read the diary of Anne Frank, and it's just something like we've done. And I didn't know this. But Anne's diary, the book is based off of, is the second most read book in the world.
What?
Only falling short to the Bible.
What?
Yeah. Oh, so also Barbara had an aversion to eating beans. Like, she hated beans. Come to find out, like in the book and everything, that's what Anne and her family lived off
of. I was going to say, that's all they had in an attic?
Yeah. And also, remember how Barbara would only take baths, not showers? In the concentration camps, they would tell the prisoners, like, it's time to get a shower. And that's when they would go into the gas chamber. She could associate that with the showers. Now, back to Barbara and, like, her childhood. Her family didn't know what to do, so they were scared that something was wrong with her, so they took her to a psychiatrist. However, Barbara had noticed this time, like every time that she brought up being someone named Anne and her other life and all of that, people didn't believe her. People got tense. It was weird, you know? And so she was like, I'm not going to say anything. Like, I'm not going to, like, you're not getting rid of me.
Yeah.
Like, no, no, no. And so she didn't mention anything about it. And the psychiatrist was like, she's a typical young girl, healthy, no signs of mental illness. Like, it's her imaginary friend, if anything. Like, you're fine. Because again, at this point, no one knew who Anne Frank was.
Right.
Now, when Barbara was in school, she found joy in writing and being able to express herself with words. She would often write down her feelings and memories of her past life, but then she would throw them away before anyone could find them. So, because she started to not talk about it so much, because again, people would like not believe her, make fun of her. And by people, I mean her family. But then, like most of us, Barbara was in class one day and her teacher started talking about the Holocaust and mentioned Anne Frank. Now, Barbara's ears perked up and she was also confused because how did her teacher know about Anne Frank, aka her, who she has, you know, been saying that she is? Like, how did someone know about this name? Because she, again, she only talked about it with her family and they shut her down. So she was like, I ain't telling no one shit.
Remind me, did she say her parents' names too, or just her sister Margot?
Just her sister Margot.
Okay.
That I know of. Okay. But like, she would just ask where she is, which made sense to me though, when you learned that her and Margot were sent to a different concentration camp at the end of their life.
Yeah.
You know, and so it was just them two. But this is the moment that Barbara found out that Anne Frank was a real person. So when this all happened in class, she was like, holy fuck. Like, the dream she had or the nightmare she had where people would burst in, it's when they were found in the attic, when she talked about the attic and like playing hide and seek. Like, you know, all the things, it was just like, holy fuck. Like, this is what I have lived. I know these details and I shouldn't know these details. Because at this time, I think she was like 9. So, you know, I mean, she had only been born 9 years, obviously, because she's 9 years old. But then Anne Frank had died 9 years prior.
Right.
So it, again, it's not like it has been like how we have it in school now. Like, even before school, you might know of Anne Frank. But her family just kind of like, sure, like, whatever. I mean, they were kind of like, that's kind of weird that you said that, but somehow, some way, you just made this fucking name up.
Right.
When she was 10 years old, the family took a vacation to different parts of Europe and everything, and they ended up going to Amsterdam, which is where the place is, like, that they hid, that annex, the attic. And at this point, Anne Frank's story is, you know, it's known worldwide. It's, you know, taken over everything because it's so fucking compelling and sad. And, you know, it's just like the way we consume true crime and stuff. Mm-hmm. It's like super sad. So it's not like, oh, I love learning about it. But you do, because it gives tribute to these people who would be nameless, but they're given voices that live on past that, and we get to learn about everything, you know, all the things. But
well, and I think too, especially with when it comes to World War II and the Holocaust, it's also like, how the fuck did this happen in 1940, whatever? This isn't, you know, 800 BC. Like, right. How is this genocide possible in what we would consider like a modern day world?
Right. So at the time that they're in Amsterdam, the Anne Frank House, as it's known, was transformed into a museum. Also, I didn't know this, but like, I could see how it is. Amsterdam is notoriously difficult to navigate. I'm like, oh, great. I want to visit there. But, you know, directions are not my thing. Mm-mm. Okay. If you can't say like turn left at McDonald's, I don't know where the fuck you're talking about. But Barbara was like Dora the Explorer and led her parents to the museum. She was like, oh, I know where this is. Like, you're fine. Like, let's go this way. Let's go that way. And it was like winding roads, all the things. And it was like a 10-minute walk. but they found the museum, aka the hiding spot. And right when they got there, Barbara remarked that it looked different than she remembered it. She also, like, went in and would tell stories that wasn't public knowledge. And she got really excited because she was like, oh, I get to see my room. And she said that it was wallpapered with photos of, like, her favorite people. And when they entered the room that, you know, she called hers, she was really sad, like super devastated. And her mom was like, what the fuck is going on? And she's like, the photos aren't here. I don't know why they're not here, but they have always been here. That's where I left them, all the things. And so her mom was like, I'm going to pull this guide over here and she's going to tell you, like, there was no photos. Like, we're going to calm this down, all the things. But the guide was like, no, there have been photos on the walls that hung there, but because visitors would touch them and everything, they had been taken down recently to be, like, touched up a little bit and then framed so they can be put back on the wall and not, you know, have grubby little fingers all over them.
Why do people, see, people are so annoying. Why would you touch that? Like, your dirty fucking little fingers are greasy and grimy and dirty. Keep your hands off of other people's shit.
Yeah.
Especially historic fucking shit that you're going to ruin.
Right.
No flash photography.
Right. Like, I'm just like, you can enjoy it without having to touch it.
We see with our eyes, not with our hands.
Right.
Like, this is things that they teach kids. Like, don't fucking touch something that's not yours.
But so her mom was like, oh, fuck. Like, again, how did she know that this was here? Back then, they didn't have fucking Google. All right. Right. So it's not like you can be like, oh, let me see the houses. Let me do a Zillow thing, go down the fucking neighborhood, zoom around, all the things.
Or have already essentially done the tour before you even get there.
Right.
Because you've seen it all online.
Yes. Oh my God. Before we went to Disney, because I was like 27 when I went to Disney, I watched a lot of the roller coaster rides on YouTube so I could know what's going on.
Yeah, my coworker did that with her son so that he wouldn't be scared.
Yeah.
I mean, was he still scared? Yes. But they did it before so he knew what to expect.
Yeah. So again, we're just saying, like, this isn't like just, hey, by the way. And they didn't have like timelines of like, oh, these have been taken down. These have, you know, whatever, whatevs. But they entered the hiding place in the attic and everything that she had dreamt about, those nightmares, came flooding back to Barbara. And she couldn't breathe. She was being overwhelmed. And she was just visibly upset. Now, they ended up leaving after that and stuff. And her parents were just like, I mean, maybe it's true. And they were Christian people. And so they didn't believe in reincarnation. But her mom was like, there's no way that she would know some of the stuff she knows. And she's been saying this since she was fucking two, being like Anne Frank.
Right.
Like, how the fuck she know that? And her parents didn't know anything about this to have, like, said anything. Like, oh, that's just so sad about Anne Frank. Like, they didn't fucking know it. So she didn't pick it up on that. But her dad was still like, she's mentally unwell or something, you know, but he let her do her thing, like, okay, sure, you were Anne Frank.
I mean, truly, though, what do you do as a parent? Because if one of my nieces or nephews was saying that they were Anne Frank, I wouldn't believe them. I would think they were just pretending all that, too. Like, I wouldn't believe them.
Yeah.
And so how do you reconcile that? And how do you handle that on the day-to-day? Do you, because you think that they're having delusions. So do you play into it? Or are you like, you have to stop talking about Anne Frank?
Right. Well, Barbara Carlin did keep talking about Anne Frank. She spoke at different things. It wasn't a TED Talk, but it was basically that, just way earlier than a TED Talk came out. And eventually, word got around to Buddy Elias, who was her cousin. Buddy was her dad's nephew. Buddy was very skeptical of Barbara, but he wanted to meet her. And he was the last living relative of Anne Frank. He didn't tell her who he was or anything, like, because he was, you know, like, kind of behind the scenes of a thing. He's not just like, hi, I'm Anne Frank's cousin, blah, 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 blah. You know what I mean? And Buddy said, quote, "It was very emotional. The first time I saw her, I had heard about her. I had a very strange feeling, like a very positive impression. It felt like we had a soul connection. Barbara seemed absolutely trustworthy to me. I could very well imagine that she was Anne. More than that, I cannot say. I have Anne too close in my memory to say anything more."
Okay, people in the back of the day talked so smart. I don't understand what the fuck that last sentence means.
Right. Like, I think he said, he's saying, like, "I love Anne too much to say, like, this person
was
is
or was
Anne,
not. Gotcha.
But, like, she seems trustworthy and something, you know, like an emotion that I can't really explain is there when I met this person."
Okay, thank you for explaining that.
But, and Barbara basically said the same thing. When they first saw each other, she said she knew, like, instantly he was someone related to Anne Frank. And she, you know, like, hugged him and they both started to cry. They spoke for 2 hours and then they continued for 20 years to be in contact. And, like, they would stay at each other's houses when they were visiting until Buddy died in 2015. So I feel like that says something right there, that they kept in contact. It wasn't like he was like, "She's believable. Get that lady away from me. Don't let her come back by me." Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, no, it seems credible. And maybe he just really missed Anne. Who knows? Because they do look like, I'm going to show you a picture in a minute. But also how this all got set up, it's not like he just reached out to her and was like, "Hey, I want to meet you." Weirdly, he went through her publisher because Barbara had published a book. She was a child prodigy of an author and all the things, okay? Which I'll get into in a minute. But Barbara's memories kind of faded as she got older. And she was like, "Okay, like, I feel better," because she now could live her life as Barbara and not feeling like she had to, like, keep Anne alive, if that makes sense. And so, you know how she was scared of people in uniforms and stuff? Barbara was like, "I'm going to face my fears." And she ended up pursuing a career with the Swedish police service. And she was, like, a mounted officer.
I am. Get it, girl.
Right? Now, later in life, when she was 40, the past life memories came back. And it was when she started working with one certain person on the mounted police unit or whatever. And the interactions that she had with them just reminded her of something. And it made her feel back, like, how she felt when she thought she was Anne, or, you know, all of that. And she just felt very overwhelmed, and that this person had ill intent with her. And one night she had this dream where it was a time from a concentration camp. And when she looked, she saw that officer, but it wasn't like him, but she was like, "I think that officer in a past life was that Bergen Belson person," like, whatever. And I was like, "Hey, I mean, who knows? Because, I mean, if we're believing her, maybe she could see, like, past life people know past life people." You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And we all get deja vu and stuff. So it's like, I can see that happening. But today she lives her life as Barbara. And she wrote this book. And again, she said that, you know, she thinks of Anne often, but she doesn't feel like she's living for Anne. But she does believe it's her life's work to do justice for Anne Frank and her story. And a lot of people said that Anne's biggest dreams and goals was to be a writer, which, again, she did get a book published. And, like, her dad didn't want her diary published. He was like, "No, that's intimate, all the things." But in the diary, she talked about how she wanted to be an author and she wanted to write these books and stuff. And he was like, "Who am I to deny that of her at this point?" And so that's why the diary was published and stuff. But, like I said, Barbara is a published writer. And so it seems like Anne did get to fulfill her dream even further through Barbro, because when she was 12 years old, her first book was published. It was poetry, and it became the best-selling poetry book in Swedish history.
This is something that's always stuck with me about the Holocaust, was just everybody's memories and heirlooms and all of those things that are like gone forevermore, you know?
Right. Stolen.
And it's like that, just never having pictures or, I mean, literally, okay, I know, back to the Christmas decorations, but when I was at my mom's today, I asked her, I was like, what's your favorite Christmas decoration in here? And that's such a Donna question, but I didn't come up with it. Colby asked me that yesterday, because that is not something I would have thought to have asked. But I said, you know, asked her what it was. And it was her ceramic tree that was her mom's, you know? And it's like, survivors don't have that.
Right.
They have nothing of what their family was, you know, because it was either all stolen or destroyed. And I know that that has nothing to do with the story, but every time it's like, that's what gives me the pit in my stomach.
Yeah. When we were in Houston, I don't know if you had seen it before, but there is that Holocaust museum that we went to.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, we talked a little bit, but it was about like, oh my gosh, like, did you read this or, you know, whatever? Because it was letters and all the things. But like, you know, I'm a talker and I was silent. Carrie was silent. Like, it was just so emotional.
And you knew it was going to be going into it, but nothing. Like, I was not prepared.
Me either. Oh, let me show you her picture.
I mean, they do favor, but I feel like that doesn't necessarily matter when it comes to people who have had a past life. Like, they don't always look like the people, you know?
Right.
I'm sure it definitely made it for more of a connection for the cousin.
But, like, even her eyes, I don't know. And, I mean, again, they both have dark hair and all of that, but, like, they do look alike. So, what do you think?
I don't know. If this would have come out any other time, I'd have been like, absolutely not.
Right.
But the fact that it was like before the diaries and all of that even came out.
Right.
I'm a little more like, maybe. But I also don't know if past life stuff is real. I don't necessarily know if they come back so quickly. Like, why would she have come back so fast? You know, it's not very often that they come back and it's like, the family that they had before is still alive.
Yeah. But I mean, I think we've had sinister sightings where it's been like,
yeah,
right after, or, you know, I don't know. Because also, I don't think there's like a time limit on reincarnation that I know of. Like,
yeah,
I mean, I know there's a limit, like it's to where you reach nirvana kind of thing. And so like you have learned all the lessons you need to and all the things, but like, I don't think it's like, well, you've been here 5 years and now it's time for you to be born again into, you know, this, like, I don't think it's like that. So it might've just been at that time, Barbro was born and her destiny was to be a writer and to do all the things. And it's like, that's what Anne was. And so it's like her soul was in her body. I mean, I don't know.
My gut says it's not her, but I mean, what do I know?
But even like, maybe if she wasn't in a past life, maybe, I don't know. I was going to say like, maybe like the spirit of Anne Frank or like something. How does she know all the details? Like when she was so young, like the Margot thing?
Yeah. Well, and the pictures thing too. Like, because again, you're not just Googling and doing a tour beforehand.
Yeah.
Well, before we get into my story, we have to talk about Miracle Maid. This is the episode of Sleep.
Oh my God, I literally was about to say that. And you know what? I'm not mad about it, because even though Carrie is the sleep lover, I have begun to really like sleep. And not just sleep, but good, restful sleep.
Miracle Maid makes sure that you get the best quality night's sleep, because Miracle Maid is temperature regulating bedding that helps you sleep that perfect temperature all night long.
It's a season of freaking cold weather. You want to have that body regulating temperature all night long. Also, it's a season of gift giving, and Miracle Maid sheets would be the best gift to give to your loved ones and also to yourself.
They really are. We gave these to Tiffany for her birthday, and she freaking loved them. So take a page out of our gift-giving book and give this because they will not be disappointed.
Also, Miracle Made offers a whole line of self-cleaning antibacterial bedding, such as sheets, pillowcases, comforters. And guess what? They prevent up to 99.7% of bacteria growth and require up to 3 times less laundry.
That means you sleep better at the right temperature, and you're not going to get acne and allergies and all of that from your bedding because they're essentially self-cleaning.
They use silver-infused fabrics that was inspired by NASA.
So, you know, does that make you smarter?
Absolutely. Asterisk, these sheets will not make you smarter, but will make you sleep really well.
These sheets are so luxurious, but they don't come with that luxury price tag either. So it really does make the perfect gift for, hey, look, if you've got like a newlywed couple in your family or somebody that's just starting out with their first apartment or their house, or just for yourself, these truly are the perfect gift for the season. So go to trymiracle.com/creep to try Miracle Made sheets today. And whether you're buying them for yourself or your friends, if you order today, you can save over 40%. And if you use our promo code at checkout, you're going to get 3 free towels and save an extra 20%.
Miracle Made is so confident in their product, it's backed with a 30-day money-back guarantee. So if you aren't 100% satisfied, you'll get a full refund.
Upgrade your sleep with Miracle Made. Go to trymiracle.com/creep and use the promo code creep to claim your free 3-piece towel set and save over 40%.
Again, that is trymiracle.com/creep to treat yourself.
Thank you, Miracle Made, for sponsoring this episode. Okay, so for this story, we are going to Santa Rosa, California. Where we're at is a pretty upscale area. All right, so this story starts off with a lady by the name of Shirley Nelson. Shirley was born in Pennsylvania in 1930. Shirley was one of those people that her whole world kind of revolved around the person she was with. She had gotten married really young, and the guy that she married, I don't know if she was, but you know, everything said that he was Catholic and wanted a very large family. They tried and tried and tried to have kids, and they couldn't. So eventually, they got an annulment.
Damn, I thought that happened like within a certain amount of days.
I think so too, but maybe because they, I don't fucking know, maybe because it was like the early 50s, late 40s, early 50s.
Yeah.
And they didn't have kids, and because it was like part of his religion to want kids, maybe something like that happened. Or maybe they really got a divorce and the annulment was like through the church. So, it may have been like, you know, because, correct me if I'm wrong, y'all, but Catholics kind of have to have their divorces like blessed through the church to be able to remarry in the church. So maybe something with that.
Okay.
Because of course, a woman's worth in her marriage is only tied to the number of kids that she can give you.
Of course.
It didn't take long after Shirley's first marriage ended that she actually did get remarried. Now in this marriage, she didn't have biological kids because she wasn't able to, but the man that she married did. So she had 2 kids that were now her stepkids and started having grandchildren, and it seemed like a pretty happy marriage. And just like I said before, Shirley gave her all to relationship. Like, it seems like her relationships were all consuming in that became her identity. Unfortunately, though, that marriage only lasted for about 12 years. And this kind of left Shirley floundering a little bit because, you know, she'd never really worked out of the home. And again, her marriage was her whole identity. But in 1966, she met a guy named Ron Nelson. Now, Ron was 24, and I think she was 12 years older than him because he would have been born in 42. She was born in 30, I think. So she'd have been 12 years older than him.
Okay.
So he was 24, which means she'd have been about 36. Ron had just graduated from college and had become a CPA. She was out at a bar in Minneapolis with a bunch of her friends, and he was there, and they hit it off. They started dating, and after about a year, they got married. Now, she hit the jackpot because, you know, Ron's a CPA. That's big business, right?
Uh-huh. He knows the numbers.
Not long after they got married, Ron got a job with Charles Schulz.
What?
Yes, the Peanuts guy. Like, okay. Charlie Brown, that Christmas song I hate. Da-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na.
What?
There's two Peanuts Christmas songs, and I can't stand them. There's two types of people in this world. You either love the Peanuts Christmas songs, or you hate them.
Or there's me, who I'm not sure I know them.
The one I just did, I think that's the Linus and Lily, not her name.
Lucy?
Yes, that's their song. Hold, please. We can't play them because, you know, duh, we're not trying to get sued. But look it up if you don't know them. But it's the Linus and Lucy song and the Christmas Time is Here with the vocals.
Okay, I do know that song.
I don't love those. And again, if you love it, you're going to be like, Carrie, you're the worst human on the planet because those are the best Christmas songs. Like, you are literally, except for Donna, she's got to be option C, of course. But I just feel like you are in one of two categories. You either love it or you don't. But Ron Nelson got this job as the business manager. So he was jet setting all over the world working on licensing agreements.
Holy fuck.
Big money.
Yeah.
Now, it has taken everything in my inner being not to put a T in Charles Schulz's last name. So sorry if I'm butchering it because I want to say Schulz so bad.
Yeah,
and I'm
it like, just sounds right.
There's no T, but there is T in this story. So. So like I said, big money, so they are living large. They move to a country club in Santa Rosa. This is like the Peanuts center of the world. Like it's where all of like the, it's where Charles Schulz's headquarters is and all of that.
This has really nothing to do with the story, but on TikTok, I followed this girl named Birdie, and she loves Snoopy in a puffer jacket. And she's been finding them at, like, Home Goods, TJ Maxx, all the things. And, like, I look for her all the time, like, when I'm doing stuff. Because I'm like, ooh, let me see if I can get the Snoopy in the puffer jacket, whatever. I don't like them. I'm not a huge Peanuts fan.
Yeah, me neither. I don't know why. But now, my brother-in-law, huge one. And he is like, how can you not like them?
Yeah, like, I mean, I would watch it, but it's not my jam, you know? But anyway, every time you say the Peanuts, all I think about is Snoopy in a puffer jacket.
Now, did my oldest sister have a Snoopy that was a coin thing? And he was about 3 feet tall. So that motherfucker was heavy.
Oh my God.
There ain't no telling how much money was in that.
Right. My sister used to do woodworking and stuff. Mm-hmm. And for Christmas, she did the Peanuts, like the whole cutout stuff. So that's what we had. We had the California raisins, we had Simpsons, all the things.
That is one of my wishes, is that I wish she was still alive to show me how to do that.
I know.
Because her stuff was so, like, it was such good quality of just, like, her art was good, but also it lasted.
It did. Like,
why did it last so long?
I don't know.
Do you know what we found at Donna's house? Do you remember back in the day when everybody was doing the yellow ribbons in their yard for, like, their service members and stuff? We found my cousins in her house. Don't know why, but that motherfucker was still fine. And I know that that stayed outside at my grandma's house forever. And there was, like, no splintering of the wood. Yeah. Like, it looked brand new. Like, you just needed to wipe it off because it was old and dirty.
Yeah. I still have some of her stuff.
Yeah, I do, too. I have the bear for Valentine's now. Yeah. I'm like, yes! Okay, I can't remember if I said this, but they lived on a golf course and, like, did the golf course life. Like,
oh my
ladies God. Who lunch, like, oh, we're off of work now. Let's just go putt-putt around a couple of holes before we go in for a nightcap. You know, I don't know what rich people do.
But that's what you would love.
Yes. More so driving the golf cart, but yes. But again, they lived the life that you would expect them to live with the amount of money that they made and where and how they lived.
I just want to experience being rich just for a little bit, or being with someone who's rich.
In 1995, they had their 28th wedding anniversary, and seemed like everything was going well until July 5th of 1995.
2 years after the snowman was made?
Yes.
Okay.
Police get called to Charles Schulz's office. There had been a shooting. When they get there, they see Ron Nelson lying on the ground, barely clinging to life. He had been shot 2 times. So paramedics start attending to him. Police go through the building to try to clear the building because it's like, is this an active shooter? Is this like a one-off? Like what? Who the fuck knows what's going on, right? So the police make their way and they find in an office a woman. The woman has also been shot. She's still alive, barely, but enough to where she was able to say who she is. And it was Shirley.
Oh, no. Well, honestly, it's better than what I was thinking because I was thinking he was fooling around and it was his mistress and Shirley shot them.
Now, like I said, Ron had been shot. He was shot in his back, though. One of the bullets went through his pancreas and his liver, like, and all the way up through his abdomen. So he gets rushed to the hospital. As they're also looking around, they find a .357 Magnum gun. It's like this huge handgun. Now, when Shirley and Ron get taken to the hospital, a police officer goes with them. You know, that's how they do, just in case anybody says anything or remembers anything or all the things. On the way to the hospital, the police officer asks Shirley what happened. And she tells police that she shot Ron.
What?
She said that she shot Ron and then shot herself. And then she asked, is the son of a bitch dead?
What happened?
So now the police are like, what the fuck is happening? And now both Ron and Shirley are at the hospital in critical care, both in surgery, having all the things done. And police are trying to figure out what the fuck actually just happened.
Yeah.
So back at the scene, they start interviewing Ron's coworkers. They said that at about 11 o'clock that morning, Shirley came to the offices. And it was weird. Like, she was dressed differently than she normally would. And she was in a different car. And so they surmised that she didn't want to be recognized because she didn't want him to be like, hey, Ron, your wife's here. She's on the way up. Like, she wanted to surprise him. So she came up in a different car, wearing different clothes. She was pretty recognizable. But she parked at the front, walked in. She had on sunglasses and, like I said, all this weird stuff. And everybody's like, it was just bizarre. Like, we knew it was her, but she was, like, clearly trying to not look like herself. But they said that she walked in, asked his receptionist, is he in there? And then went to his office. When he stood up, it was almost like he could see the gun and know what was about to happen. And so he was trying to run away and she shot him twice in the back. They do talk to the Charles Schultz, who didn't hear anything because his office was on the other end of the building. But he's like, you know what? I think I know why this happened.
Oh, shit. Also, he didn't hear because he was listening to Lucy and Linus's Christmas song.
Maybe on repeat. So come to find out, Ron and Shirley and Charles and his wife, Jean, are actually pretty good friends. Like, they hang out together and all the things. And Charles tells police, yeah, Ron was having an affair with his secretary. So, okay. At this point, Ron is 50, which means she's 62. And his secretary was 41. Her name, Eileen Christensen.
Come on, Eileen.
Oh, boss man, Charles, said, look, this is bad. Like, you two need to break this off, because he's like, either break it off or I'm going to fire you both, because we're not about to have, like, a sexual harassment lawsuit if shit goes down. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm sure he didn't say shit. If shit goes down or your wife finds out and something bad happens, like, I'm not having this. Like, you two either break it off or you both lose your jobs.
Well, and also, you know, his wife was probably saying, you better do something. Like, because Charles probably told his wife that that was happening. And if they're friends, she's probably like, do something.
Yeah.
Shirley deserves better than this.
Right. Well, and about a month before the shooting is when Ron did tell Shirley that he had been having an affair. Now, Shirley didn't take it well. Like, this was, again, her world was collapsing, third marriage, everything's collapsing. You know, at the beginning, everything was so great. Their age gap didn't matter. The fact that they weren't having children didn't matter, all the things. And now he's telling her 28 years into the marriage actually, I'm having an affair and we want to start this life because, like, we're going to have kids together and stuff.
What?
And I'm like, first of all, you're 50, she's 40. That's, like, now you decide this? Like, y'all are 28 years into marriage and now you decide? Yeah. Like, yes, you can have kids at 50 and 40. That's fine. Do what you want to do. But, like, now you decide this?
Yeah. Oh, that is one of my worst fears, is being cheated on. Like, especially if I do finally find someone who agrees to be with me.
Yeah.
They cheat, because that's something I can't come back from. No. I cannot.
I wouldn't either.
Like, I can't. The rejection part, and then I will become bitter and petty, and I'll never be able to let it go.
She ain't fucking lying. This bitch can be petty. But you know what? Okay, I always think about, you know, in Sex and the City, Charlotte becomes Jewish with mm-hmm. Harry, and he's like, you can't always throw that in my face. You can't be like, take the trash out. Like, I gave up Jesus for you. You know, like, yeah. you can't always hold that over me. I gave up Christmas for you. I did this. Like, that's how I would be. Like, I know that that's not the same as an affair, but, like, that is truly how I would be. Like, it would always be like, well, you had the affair, so.
Yeah. Well, and I would just never trust them. Like, they'd be like, hey, I'm going to XYZ. And I'm like, watching everything. Well, why did you stop here? The light was long. Why?
Yeah.
Who were you talking to? Were you not paying attention because you were on your phone talking to someone?
Especially now that you can hide apps on your phone. Mm-hmm. That, to me, is, like, so shitty.
Yeah. I have trust issues anyway, but I try to trust people until they give me a reason not to. But after that, it is done.
Like you said, there's no coming back from it. Well, and I feel like, too, they probably really weren't going to have kids. I think it was just a big old fuck you to Shirley and just a hit below the belt mm-hmm. to make her feel worse.
Mm-hmm.
But it also wasn't completely out of left field either, this affair, because it seems like there had been, as early as like 1991, some cracks and stuff made it seem like Ron was struggling more with their age difference, because I feel like it's one thing when you're 20 and 30, but when you're 60 and 50, or, you know, and thinking about the future, 70 and 60, those age differences do get bigger.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, if it's who you love, it's who you, it doesn't matter. Like, right. You know, but anyway. But where this really came to a head was in 1991, Shirley had a stroke. And she didn't have physical symptoms from it still. Like, she had full use of all of her limbs. You know, not a lot changed except maybe how Ron viewed her, in that, like, he was really starting to realize the age difference.
Yeah.
And they say that at that point is where he changed a lot and their relationship changed a lot. And Shirley was in it to win it. Like, Shirley was like, look, I know that our relationship has changed, but she was like, okay, I'm going to try to tone my body up a little bit. I'm going to start to dress, you know, better and all the things, which she was, I mean, a wealthy woman. You know, she didn't dress poorly, but maybe a little more youthful or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, she really tried to step her game up in order to keep her husband. And then to find out he's had an affair and there's no keeping him, it seemed to have really broken her. Now, what Shirley did was pretty planned, though. She had actually rented a car to take to the offices so they wouldn't recognize her car, and police were able to figure out that by, like, tracking receipts and all of that, to figure out where she rented it. Now, police got warrants for everything, of course, and in Shirley's vehicle, not the rented Shirley's vehicle, in her actual vehicle, they found .357 bullets, and they found a receipt for the revolver. So they were able to go where she bought the gun and be like, okay, who bought this gun? Was it her? And he's like, oh, yeah, actually. She had bought the gun almost a month before the shooting.
Oh, fuck. Like, really planning it.
Yeah. Okay. So around June 8th, Ron had told her about the affair and moved out. Around June 15th, she went to buy the gun. But there was a 2-week waiting period for the gun. So she bought the gun, had the background check, all the things. And while she was waiting for the gun to come in, she started doing shooting lessons.
Holy fuck.
So not just a, hey, like, I'm going to buy a gun. I'm angry that he's having an affair, whatever. Like, this wasn't a, he told me this morning he's having an affair and I lost it and I went up to his place of work and shot him. This was, he told me he was having an affair. A week later, I go buy a gun.
And I'm going to kill him.
Yeah. 2 weeks later, like, I did my background check. I'm waiting. But while I wait, I'm going to take shooting lessons. And then I'm going to go rent a car so that they don't recognize me. Well, guess what? They both survived.
Oh, fuck. I mean, I'm glad.
As they're coming out of all their things, the police start to interview. And Shirley tells them, well, everything.
Well, I mean, they can't put the cat back in the bag after she told him in the ambulance anyway.
Right. She told police, like, I don't know my life without Ron. Because, again, her life was so intertwined with her relationship status and what this would mean for her. And, you know, the more that police investigated, they found that, you know, she, of course, was pretty angry and that she had even tried to buy his secretary a house to be like, okay, if you stop having an affair, like, we'll buy you a house. And that didn't work. And so then she just kind of shifted her anger and changed her plan to this. But here's the thing too, though, is that Ron was pretty shitty after he said, well, you know, well, aside from the whole affair thing, but after telling Shirley about the affair and moving out, he was still hanging out and having sex with Shirley.
So, like, leading her own and stuff.
Yes. And so she's like, I don't fucking know what's what. Like, he's like, this is over. I'm moving on. Well, actually, not quite. You know? And so that is very confusing. And I don't know. First of all, also, as the person that he was leaving his wife for, I'd be like, wait, y'all are still having sex? Are you kidding me?
Right.
Like, you told her and moved out. Like, I feel like it's one thing if they're still living as a married couple and she's none the wiser, that, like, you kind of assume they are. I mean, that he's probably telling you they're not, but you kind of assume. But then for him to have moved out and told her and then them still to be, like, having sex with his wife, that's a whole level of fucked up. Like, he literally wanted his cake and eat it too.
Oh, was he eating her cake?
Yes. Everybody's cake. Now, of course, this was, like, huge news, too, because, it literally happened at, like, the headquarters of this huge, well-known empire, right? Now, Ron does tell police, too, sorry, I forgot to say this, that on July 4th, that he had met with Shirley and that he had told her, like, actually, I know we've still been hooking up and all, but, like, it's over for good, good. And then the next day is the day that the shooting happened. You know, it was this whole thing, like this whole argument on July 4th that people saw on the golf course of him basically ending it.
Oh, you better not do something to me in public because I will go off.
No, I don't like the public displays of that, like arguing and stuff. That makes me so uncomfortable.
No, and like.
And I know like every couple, like there's been times that we've, like, Colby and I have had disagreements in front of y'all, but, like, that's so fucking awkward to me. Like, haven't been that single person before with couples, and it's like, y'all are literally arguing in front of me. Like, this is so awkward, you know?
Yeah, but in public, like, at a golf course and stuff.
Yes, because, like, you could just see them standing there screaming at each other, and that's,
and I would lose it. Like, if he told me that he was cheating and did the things and then all the things, no.
Now, I do believe that Shirley thought that they were both going to die. Duh, because she shot him and then shot herself. But also at the house, when they did the search warrant of her home, on the table, like you could tell that she had really been like going through everything. And because like wedding photos were out, there were all these letters that she had written to friends about everything and talking about like how much she loved Ron. But like, if I can't have him in this life, I'm going to have him in the next and we're both going to hell together kind of thing. And I think that she really thought that they were both going to die. So police arrested her on attempted murder. Now, after she was arrested, though, she did stay in the hospital, they said, because of her injuries and her mental state. The psychiatrist that was seeing her at the hospital said that she was delusional and that she was going to need ongoing care because they were fearful that she was going to self-harm. She did go to a mental health facility for a little while and then was eventually released from there and went to county jail. Now, when it came time for her arraignment, Shirley's attorney was basically like, hey, the law is clear. You have kind of have to be able to let her out on bail. And the judge was like, I mean, technically you're right. So, okay, $2 million. Now, this was like literally the most that anybody had ever been given in that area for bail.
Shit.
And after Shirley's like arraignment bail hearing, she didn't stay in jail long before she was bailed out.
By who?
Charles Schulz.
What?
Literally, that is the exact reaction I had. And people were like not happy about it because it was like literally like some of the quotes were money talks and privilege walks because she is a rich white woman and she is getting out on, I mean, yeah, it's $2 million, but she's getting out on bail. And how many people have to stay in jail awaiting their trial for, you know, all these other crimes? And it's like, she's in there for attempted murder and she's getting out on bail. But basically, he was like, this is out of character. Like, I truly believe that she had some sort of mental break. And that's why he put up the money to get her out, because he was like, I really feel like this is not who she is.
So say someone's stupid enough to be with me, right? They get married.
Okay, let's rephrase that.
Oh, okay.
Let's say that someone sees how great you are and falls in love with you and y'all get married. Go.
Okay. And he cheats on me and I shoot him all the things, right? And I'm basically Shirley, but don't call me Shirley. Get it? It's quote. But would you bail me out?
Yes.
I'd bail you out.
If I had the money, I mean, obviously.
I'd bail you out too, because I'd be like, that motherfucker cheated on you. Yeah.
I mean, I feel like I would bail you out no matter what.
No, if you tried to kill my mama?
Yeah, I mean, yes, if you like tried to kill Colby or something, yes. But like, I mean, there's not much that I wouldn't bail you out for.
Yeah, but like that. Like, not that she had a reason to do anything, but she had a reason. But, like, it's more, like, with you. Like, yeah. I understand Charles being her friend saying, like, I think this is out of character. Like, because I'd be like, he had it coming. He had it coming.
Okay, so about a year after the shooting, Shirley goes to trial. Like I said, they charge her with attempted murder. And their whole defense was her mental state. But, I mean, keep in mind, this bitch fucking planned this. This was not an heat-of-the-moment type thing. This bitch planned this for, let's just say, a month.
Yeah. This was a goodbye Earl kind of thing.
I mean, not to rehash everything, but, you know, she bought the weapon. She did the waiting period. She took lessons while she was waiting. She rented a car. She did all the things.
Altered her appearance.
Yes. And they're like, oh, she was just in a bad mental state. Basically, it was a break. All the things. So it goes to the jury and they have a hung jury. 9-3 to acquit her.
How hung was it?
9-3 inches. So like 9 people were going to be like, nah, she's fine.
What the fuck?
So to avoid another trial, yada, 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 y'all know how this goes, they ended up coming to a plea agreement. So she pled guilty to attempted murder.
Oh, just a little thing like that.
So she gets sentenced to 1 year in jail, 5 years probation, and 3,000 hours of community service.
Oh my God.
She spent 6 months in jail.
Holy fuck. And you know it was a cushy jail.
Well, and to be fair, she did 6 months in jail and then she did 6 months in like a mental health facility. And then like this was on an episode of Snapped and they're like, you know, she just really did all of her community service at the Santa Rosa Food Bank. And it was so transformative for her and all these things. I'm like, she tried to kill her husband and herself, planned it for a month and got a goddamn plea deal.
Yeah.
For a year in jail. 5 years probation and 3,000 hours.
Right. And rich people do be volunteering anyway. So,
yes.
Like, that's not even anything for her.
And she got all of that because she's rich.
Yeah.
Because she has the money for a defense attorney. Do you think that the fucking court-appointed attorney would have done all that, would have had that no. level of defense? Would all No. She would be rotting in prison for 30 years.
Uh-huh.
People do more time for fucking weed than this bitch did for attempted murder.
Absolutely.
Well, they, of course, got divorced in 1997, and Ron did marry
Wait, his... they didn't get divorced before the court thing?
I don't think so.
That's wild, because this all happened in 1995, right?
Yeah, and then the court was in 96, and they got, yeah. So Ron did marry the lady he was having the affair with. She moved back to her country home after she got out of prison, and she passed away at the age of 79. And of note, Ron and his mistress were fired.
Oh, shit. Charles really holding true on that.
Charles was like Team Shirley 100%.
Absolutely.
You know, this is not one of those like domestic violence things where it's like, okay, they had been abused for years and years and it became enough and they shot him while they slept even. Like, even that, I could say like, okay, they snapped.
Right.
Or they finally had enough or they whatever. This was not that. This was fucking planned. The fact that she got what she got to me is just outrageous.
Yeah.
I don't care how shitty Ron was. Like, he could have had an affair every fucking week, a different woman, and he still would not have deserved to have been
shot. Tried to be murdered. Yeah. Also, okay, this is me thinking. I feel like I'm you thinking about the money. But, like, you know, they probably did not have a prenup because they got together right when he...
When he had nothing.
Yeah. He got out of college, did the stuff. So, it's like, girl, take him to the fucking cleaners because he's cheated on you. You have witnesses that he's cheated on you, all the things. Like, but I get where she didn't understand life without, the thing. But I'm like, I can miss him with a lot more money in my pocket and all the things.
I know. I wonder what their divorce settlement was.
Well,
like,
yeah,
did she get some?
She had to have if she moved to their country home.
Yeah, she had to have. I mean,
that doesn't even make sense. Like, you tried to kill me.
But is it like
that negated everything?
But is it a no-fault divorce? I don't know. I don't know. I don't know the other rules, but I also don't know rules from 1997, you know?
Right. And I don't know rich people rules.
No.
Like,
no, I don't
either. My sister and her husband, she bought, I think it was like $30 off of the internet. Or maybe she didn't even, no, I don't even know if she bought it, but it just had like redacted shit. And she just typed their name in, typed it all up, and that was their divorce.
Yeah.
You know, like, but it was like $30. So I don't know if that was just like the fees for the court.
Yeah.
Or whatever. And like, that was their thing because we're not rich, you know? And it was
There's
just
nothing
like,
to separate.
Yeah.
And then they both just lived in the house. So they didn't even separate the house.
Oh, Lord.
So bizarre. Like, again, this is such. It just shows you what money and privilege can buy you.
Yeah.
It literally can buy you your freedom. And we've seen that before, but God, this is just one of those that, again, people are in prison for longer for inconsequential drug charges that are just.
You and the big words today, surmise, inconsequential.
Meanwhile, those probably don't even go in those spots.
How do you say that word? I want to be smart.
Inconsequential.
Inconsequential.
I made it up.
It sounds so funny, though.
Well, I could say it. I could say all the words, but not that. When I said it to you, I was like, that sounds really weird. Was that right?
Inconsequential. Inconsequential. Something continental.
But I'm like, but truly, and what I mean by that is it could be like, oh, they have like a fucking dime bag of weed.
Yeah.
It's not like I know what I'm talking about.
Oh, Lord. Yeah, you totally did.
But especially in 1995, though.
Yeah.
I mean, think about it.
Absolutely.
Now in California, it wouldn't fucking matter. But 1995, that's a different story.
Mm-hmm.
Well, y'all let us know what y'all think about this episode. Was she Anne Frank reincarnate? Do you think that Shirley should have spent more time in jail? Let us know. Don't forget to like, subscribe, review all the things, and remember,
creep it real and don't get scared.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.